This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
I can pinpoint the moment you closed your eyes and said yes to the flooding.
Kristen Hirsch's voice might sound familiar. She was the lead singer and guitarist for the rock band Throwing Muses, and later the trio 50 Foot Wave. Here she is performing Flooding for us, a song from her new solo album called Crooked.
At twice the speed, hungering for someone who left in half the time. Fuzzy, fumbling, that thirst is gone. We're alone.
Kristen Hirsch put her guitar aside for a while to write her first book, a memoir titled Rat Girl. She joined us earlier and began with a reading from the first page of her memoir.
The handmade Jesus on Napoleon's living room wall has no face, just a gasping, caved-in head with blood dripping down its chest. He appears to have been crucified on some popsicle sticks. His mottled green and gold surface reminds us of fish scales, and his paddle-shaped toes fan out like a tail. It is a singularly gruesome crucifix. We call it Fish Jesus.
So, again, Kristen Hirsch, that is the first paragraph of your book, Rat Girl. And I think it gives readers some sense of just how irreverent, unconventional, sort of out there in many ways the book is. And what you've done, and in a way this will be the ultimate spoiler, although a simple reading of the book jacket gives some of this away, but basically you've written about 1 year of your life, 1985. Could you, and here's where the spoiler part comes in, could you in 30 seconds reel through for me how you summarized the year 1985? What happened to you in that year?
I started out homeless, essentially, or believing I was homeless. And
you were 18 years old.
Right. I had begun hearing music. I was playing with my band around Providence and then Boston. We were signed to our first record deal, and I was diagnosed first schizophrenic and then bipolar, and then I became pregnant with my first child. I think that's it.
I think you actually did that in under 30 seconds. So this is basically your old diary, you know. And what's interesting about this, and I think you actually reference this in your book, is that for many people, rereading an old diary can be embarrassing. It can be painful. I think your words in the book are that reading an old diary can make you both nostalgic and nauseous. So you not only went back and read it, you basically turned it into a book. Why share so much?
I don't know. It is awfully embarrassing, but I think it should be. I don't think I should be allowed to publish something that isn't embarrassing.
Why? Why do you say that?
I guess because it had to be very real, and it had to encapsulate this time of beginning. Nothing was really happening. It sounds like a lot happened, but really it was just everything beginning. It was the seed of a whole bunch of journeys, and in that, you kind of have to embarrass yourself until there's nothing left to embarrass, and then you get to the universal. So really it's an it's the idiosyncratic nature of my universal experience that was not that hard to turn into what is essentially a nonfiction novel.
So as you said, this is a year that chronicles your 18th year. You're an 18-year-old. You had been homeless for a while. You're playing in Providence with your band. You got a record deal. You recorded your first album, bipolar diagnosis. You produced a soundtrack for Rat Girl that memorializes all those different sort of moments in that year of your life, and you did that through song. There's a song called Pandora's Box that I want to play a portion of.
Inside that Pandora's box was a can of wine, your milk, that shake, can you move like an insect, a bite with me.
So, Kristen Hirsch, Pandora's Box, what is that song about?
Good question. I'm often pelted with songs, and the lyrics within the songs are percussive melody, but it seems to be a song about lots of different kinds of messes, and the moment in this book that this is associated with in my head was just just a certain kind of mess.
A certain kind of mess?
Yeah.
When you were diagnosed as being bipolar, did that explain a lot of things to you?
It would have if I had believed the diagnosis. I tried very hard to believe it because I was a good girl. I was Lisa Simpson, sort of, and I believed what grown-ups told me, and they seemed so kind and helpful. I did find in reading the diary and also the book that the voice changes from kid to psychotic to medicated to clear, and the medicated voice was my least favorite and continues to be. When the book falls under the spell of medication, it no longer seems to know the difference between a heart's honesty, a real story, and reporting. And it was when I realized that those drugs were not as helpful as previously indicated that I wanted to believe I was a songwriter and not bipolar. It took me 20 years to believe that I was both.
Kristen Hirsch, you just referenced yourself as having been or as being the good girl. There's a part in your book that touches on that. This is when your band, again, you're a teenager, basically. You have a band playing gigs. I think this is a gig in Providence.
Okay. The door guy looks at Leslie like he hates her. "Hi, we're Throwing Muses, the band that's headlining tonight," she says sweetly in bouncy Californian. "That was us on stage, sound checking. There's our poster on the wall next to you with a picture of us on it." Silence. They never talk. "So, anyway, nice to meet you," she continues. "Apparently we sort of don't look like a band, but that's who we are." Laughing weakly, she pauses to let this sink in. "And we're underage, but we're still Throwing Muses, the band that's headlining tonight." He stares over our heads. We look at each other. It's painfully obvious that the three of us are sandy, salty little islanders, beach kids who don't belong here in Providence, the big city. We're clean and healthy, which is very uncool, and we don't hide it by trying to look like junkies, which is what you're supposed to do. Our clothes might be dirty, but our bodies are clean, inside and out. We practically smell like sunshine.
So, Kristen Hirsch, this gets at this idea that you are sort of the anti-band, in a sense. At some other point in the book, you said that your band isn't candy or beer, but it's spinach. It's good for you. So how? How was your band different than what we think of as the sort of stereotype of a band?
There are a lot of people who choose to do this, and it's often very style-oriented, what they do. We were all about substance. To the point where we just looked ridiculous. We had no style. Our music had no style. We were pure, raw substance, and it was quite off-putting.
That scene you just read where the bouncer, the doorman, just won't even acknowledge you, you write in the book about how there were times you were having to pay to get admitted to a club where you were playing that night because people just thought you were too young or didn't take you seriously. So,
most of the time, honestly. We would have to buy tickets to our own shows because we would get carded, and you're allowed to be underage as long as you buy tickets. I still get carded at my shows. I refuse to buy tickets, though, because I can't afford them.
You grew up in the South, in Georgia. Then you ended up in Rhode Island. But finally you moved to Boston, and that's where you started getting more press coverage and more attention. How do you think that move to Boston impacted your work as a musician?
It was everything. It was a supportive scene. You were supposed to sound like yourself. We were in a kind of subculture of the subculture. There was a garage rock scene going on. There was a, you know, classic rock scene even at the time. But we were in this sweet underground where five or six bands would play a night. Nobody seemed to be headlining. And we were all allowed to sound like ourselves, which you'd think would be more common. It's quite uncommon on this planet to be allowed to sound like yourself. You were supposed to be speaking your own language, and you would become the audience when you were off the stage and support another band who was speaking their own language. It was a beautiful bonfire of musical success that has not really been recreated in my life, because shortly thereafter we entered the music business, the recording industry, and you are not supposed to sound like yourself, and success is not measured in impact there. It's measured in units sold. So we had a beautiful upbringing in those early years in Boston.
If we jump ahead to 2007, you had had various record deals, and then you founded this nonprofit called CASH. It stands for Coalition of Artists and Stakeholders. And this is a group that records and releases music without the aid of a record label. It basically lets you circumvent the whole traditional industry model and just reach listeners directly. You know, you skip the record company middleman, you go straight to the consumer. Why did you do that?
Well, I'm not anti-record company necessarily. As much as I sound like a revolutionary, I think record companies have played a valuable role in bringing music to people. But we realized about 10 years ago that this was not sustainable, at least not for the artists that were my favorite. And so with CASH, I solved a lot of my own problems, which were related to that middleman having an ear to the marketability of my product. I see myself more as a scientist in a lab, and I didn't want my sponsors attached to the marketability of my experiments. I didn't want to have to sell my image. I had done fashion shoots. It was just nutty. It wasn't about art anymore. It was about commerce. And so I got to pull myself out of an industry that is basically rooted in fashion and only work for listeners. And what they want is art. They don't want anything but the truth. And so now that's what I want too. This is another way to be unselfconscious.
Kristen Hirsch, thanks for coming on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Kristen Hirsch's new memoir is Rat Girl. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from TheAngle at Boston.com. Our show is produced by Adam Ragusa, Jessica Alpert, and Dan Mozzie. Our interns are Griff McNerney and Jason Breslow. Tim Skog is our technical director. The senior producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.